The greatest storyteller on America's greatest podcast has passed away. Can Dopey Nation recover from such a devastating blow? Deep in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, a half-retarded, half-hot, goofy kid from Boston sits behind a computer sending out a Facebook message. Nick, and this is real, taken from Facebook. Nick, call into our stupid show. It's about a funny drug story starting to catch on. I replied, I'd love to. I got a ton of pretty funny stories. He said, haha, sweet dude. I figured you did. We're recording this Saturday and Sunday night in New York City. We will call you sometime during our sessions. If you're down, just shoot me a text and we can figure it out that way. And then he left his number, and just like that, a bond was created. The end. And that is my eulogy to the great Chris. Legendary Chris.
That was sick, man. I'm going to make sure. I'm going to send that over to Dave right away. I think Dave needs that in his world.
I wrote that high.
Hello and welcome to Dopey, the podcast about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. And I'm Dave, and today is an exciting evening in the world of Dopey because my very old and very dear friend, Aurora, is coming on the show. And I even didn't even wait to call her for the show. She's on the line right now. Say hello.
Hi.
You say hello to them. You already said hello to me.
Hi, Dopey Nation.
So what's going on? Aurora says she's got a lot to talk about. I just want to introduce her. I met Aurora in 1993, right? Or 94? 94 and a half, maybe, in a photo class. And me and Aurora hit it off immediately. And we've been we were tight for a long time, and then we lost touch, and then we became close again years ago already. And Aurora gave me my first cocaine. So congratulations. Yeah. My parents were away and we were at my parents' house and you got coke and we did coke. I think even with Todd.
Oh my God.
Do you remember that?
I remember nothing. I remember very little. Very little.
I know you
remember very little. So between the two of us, it's a fucking miracle we know anything at all.
But the stuff that we remember, it's like, I remember some things really well, like really weird little things. I remember, like, when we did coke, and I was like, I didn't like it. You know, coke was just, bleh. I never liked coke. But I remember thinking, I really shouldn't be doing this. But, like, part of me was like, I want Aurora to think I'm cool. And I just did it because I just wanted to try it. I wanted to get to the next phase of my drug taking. When did you do coke for the first time?
I did coke for the first time in high school. I think I must have been 16 or 17 years old. And, you know, at one point, my friend and I had little necklaces that were like teeny tiny glass vials that we would wear around our necks filled with cocaine.
Wow.
Thought we were so cool.
That is pretty cool to be a little kid with cocaine around your neck, though. Who was the friend?
Jenny.
Really? Jenny, I know?
Yeah, Jenny, you know.
She probably still has cocaine around her neck now. So what's going on? It sounds like you have a lot to talk about, so like lay it on us. I mean, you're going to be – this is a new style episode of Dopey. Like in the past, we've gone through a lot of different styles, and tonight's style is we talk for a bit, and then you're the opening act – for Amy Dresner, supposedly.
And I just moved to Los Angeles in January from New York. And the first month I was here, I went to this big Thursday night meeting that someone had recommended in Beverly Hills. And Amy happened to be the speaker. And, you know, she blew the top of my head off. She was so funny. And she was, the solution that she had was so strong, and just her recovery was good. She was so relatable. And you know, I all right, just loved
take it easy. She's not even going to hear this. She's not even going to hear your incredible.
No, it was such a great meeting, and she was so funny.
All right. Well, what was the gist? What was the gist that you really got took away from her qualification?
You know, it's actually the gist that I took away is something that's like stayed with me throughout this year of my recovery. Is that, you know, having a routine and being routined and disciplined gives you stability. And so,
wow. So you really remember something, and this is good because I'm going to take it full circle when she comes on the show.
Yeah, I do.
If I had more technical savvy or you were in New York, I would totally just have you on the show with her.
Aw, thanks, Dave.
No problem, Roy. I want to tell you this crazy story real quick. I've been saving this story to tell you, okay? I never saw anything like it. I could only imagine like smoke coming out of your ears when you saw it. But before I tell the story, we should just do a little quick thing. You know, Aurora is coming up on 3 years, right?
One month from today.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that before I tell my crazy story? Because, like, you might as well explain your relationship with AA and who got you sober and everything that person might have done for you and all that good stuff.
I thought I was going to tell my story next time.
All right, well, tease it a little bit. You don't want to tell any of the story? You want to save it? I'll tell you should I just tell you the meeting story?
I want to save it, yeah.
All right, so save it.
Because I have other stuff that's going on in my life this week that I could talk about right now.
So fuck it. Let's hear about that. I'll tell you my meeting story when you don't seem so ripe with great material.
Well, okay. So yesterday I had a seminal LA moment, you know, tick another thing off the box. I got into a slight accident with the car that I'm renting.
Right.
I'm renting a car from a friend. And her lease is up in November, so I'm a month shy of giving the car back to her. And yesterday, I'm at the gym, I'm in the parking ramp, I'm going down the ramp to exit, and this truck comes towards me, and I just overcompensate, and I scrape the shit out of the back of the car.
How bad?
I just took it to get an estimate, and the woman was like, oh, yeah, oh, couldn't be worse. You couldn't have done it. You couldn't have scraped it in a worse place. Like, you know, two panels and the door, it's going to cost, you know, $1,500.
Oh, man.
So I was hoping, you know, it would be less than $1,000. I could pay for it and be done with it, but I'm going to have to, like, get insurance involved now and, you know, still pay $1,000 of the deductible. So yeah, that's a bummer, but you know, it's not a problem because I do have the money to afford it.
This is your big story that you scrape the car and you can pay for it. I was waiting for something to happen. Nothing's going to happen.
No, that's part of my story. So that was taking care of that, you know. I don't want to deal with it, but I'm dealing with it.
So this is like a recovery thing. Like a gift of sobriety and recovery is that you can fuck up the car right before you have to give it back and then give up all of your hard-earned savings, but know that you can handle it, that it's okay, that life goes on.
Also, I'm test driving cars on Saturday.
Right.
To figure out like what I want to lease, what I'm going to get. So I'm like, okay, God, did you send me this little, you know, challenge right now so that I can keep in mind, like, don't try to be fucking flashy. Don't try to get some car you can't really afford. Just get something simple, something you're not going to be too precious about. And that, you know, is affordable so that, you know, forget the Audi, forget the fucking dreams of a BMW. Like, I'm going to scrape it in parking garages. It sits outside on the street. I don't have a parking spot. So just, you know, be right sized and get something that is easy and you can afford.
So what are you going to get?
I mean, I'm looking at a Hyundai. Is that how you say it?
No.
I'm going to test drive a Hyundai.
Aurora, it's a Hyundai. It's not a Hyundai.
I I don't know that I believe you, Dave. But
it's you mean, haven't you seen a commercial on it's a Hyundai. It's like the biggest selling car in the world. Hyundai, I believe, is Hyundai, I think.
We had
this conversation before, and I was so sure that it was really funny, and I was sure it was a Hyundai, but maybe it is a – I think the two of us are just fucking retarded, and I'm not sure. I think it's a Hyundai. The Dopey Nation will let me know. It's probably a Hyundai. So you have your eyes set on like a sweet Hyundai SUV?
Yeah, maybe one of those. I'm going to test drive one of those. I'm going to test drive a Honda Accord. I'm going to test drive some VW, like, SUV. I can't remember. It's, like, called a Tiguan. I'm sure I'm fucking up that name, too. And
so you're excited to get a new car is what you're telling me.
Yeah, but, you know, of course my fucking luck, like a month before I'm about to give this one back unscathed, I, like, totally fuck it up.
You just told me that was God's will to get you prepared for your new car.
So today my struggle is, like, what is, you know, well, always my struggle is, like, what is God's will and what am I just telling myself is God doing for me what I can't do for myself in order to make myself feel better? So the other thing is, so that was yesterday. So the other thing that happened yesterday too was like, I'm texting this friend of mine and like, hey, do you want to like set a time to meet like next week or next weekend? You want to hang out? She writes me back like a fucking opus of a text. Like, no, I don't want to schedule a time to hang in quotes. Like, I don't, like to schedule my friendships, and I'm not comfortable with you scheduling things for like an hour with me. It feels very much like a meeting, and it just, you know,
for a long time
this friendship hasn't been working for me.
So that's Crazy Jenny.
No,
who is it?
A different friend.
Okay. And so she wants more than an hour, and she doesn't want the end of the date scheduled. She just wants the beginning, so maybe you'll have a long sort of day together is what you're saying.
No, she's saying like she wants friends that, you know, it's not as scheduled. Like,
who is it?
I don't know what that means, honestly.
Who is it?
I don't know that I should say her name.
What does it rhyme with?
It doesn't rhyme with anything.
Is it Natalie?
Yes.
It's Crazy Natalie.
I have a few friends, Natalie. I don't think any of them are crazy, Dave, but you think, you know, all my friends named Natalie are crazy.
No, that's not true. I just think that this one is. But so you're saying that she doesn't want to schedule your time. You don't want to schedule time.
She doesn't want to, like, every time I try to see her, I'm like, oh, let's schedule, you know, time to hang out. And like, I don't know, last time she felt like I cut our time very short and I double booked, and fair enough, I did. But, you know, the larger issue is her saying, like, look, this friendship isn't working for me and it hasn't been for a long time. And, like, if you want to meet up to talk about it, I'm open to doing that. You know, I love you, but, like, you know, I feel very uncertain about this friendship.
So you're, like, having a meeting to dump your friend Natalie. Wow. This is a Dopey exclusive. You're setting up.
I mean, this is the second time that this has happened to me this year. That a friend has said, this friendship isn't working for me.
Oh, Natalie said that to you? You're not saying it to her?
No, she said it to me.
Wow.
And I'm like, this fucking friendship isn't working for me either. And it hasn't worked for me for a long time. And why am I, like, I'm just thinking about it today. I'm like, am I such a people pleaser that I just feel this obligation to stay connected to people, even people that I don't feel is a satisfying relationship? You know, what is it about me that, like, well, I am constantly, like, feeling obligated to stay connected with certain people that I don't feel that connected to?
I think it's good to keep up friendships, though.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, you know, I love her and I've known her for over 10 years and I don't want to, like, not have a relationship at all. Or I want to have, you know, I want to have the feeling of peace about the kind of relationship that we have. So, you know, I replied back to her, like, thanks for letting me know how you feel. I'm totally open to meeting with you and discussing this. And I haven't heard back, which is fine. But
This is terrible. It's another yeah. end of the friendship arrangement meeting.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm like,
you what know, are you doing to these people? Do you think you're scaring them with all this talk about God's will? Do you think that's freaking them out?
I don't talk to her about God's will. I barely talk to her, but I felt very like guilty, like I need to stay in touch because she introduced me to my boyfriend, the guy I'm dating right now. So I feel like, I owe her.
Right.
But, and maybe I need to be more honest and have tough conversations with people when I feel like relationships aren't working for me. And I'm like, maybe I'm an asshole, what's my part in it? How selfish, self-centered, and self-seeking have I been in our relationship? And also, it ends up like I feel anger and fucking resentment and a lot of shame. Like, oh God, if she doesn't want to be friends with me, who else is going to abandon me, doesn't want to be friends with me, doesn't really like me.
Well, I think it's amazing how self-centered you are that you called into Dopey to hijack the show about your friendship with fucking Natalie. This is a podcast about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. It's not about Aurora's friendships.
This is where the tools of the program can help me. And today I thought, maybe this is God doing for me what I can't do for myself, like helping me to end this relationship that, is unsatisfying. And then I thought, is that really, or maybe is that just giving me some kind of peace of mind that, it's God doing for me what I cannot do for myself?
Let me ask you a question.
But either way, if it fucking helps me, it doesn't matter,
What do you mean?
I find comfort in that thought that maybe it is God doing for me what I can't do for myself. And as long as that's comforting, that's okay. That's what matters,
So that's true. But let me ask you this. Before you stumbled into, 12-step fellowship stuff, did you consider God's will?
Never.
So isn't it weird? You don't find it weird to, be talking about God's will all the time?
Not with other people that are in recovery. With the people that are not, yes, very weird.
What about in general? I understand it and I respect it, but I've never, maybe I'm not, that good at recovery and stuff, but I don't really consider God's will. I just
you're
don't.
Not. You're definitely not.
I know. I just don't consider it. Now I'm going to tell you, I'm going to shift.
I don't think before I would consider it, but now it is something that pops into my mind as a tool. It does give me, when I'm in emotional disturbance, about this thing, about Natalie, and feeling angry, resentful, shame, all of these feelings. And when I think, hey, it was really big of her to say, she's willing to talk to me, willingness, openness, maybe this is, a sign from God that, I need to be more honest in my relationships, that, relationships that don't feel equal and reciprocal, I need to take a look at that and get into action about it instead of just going through the fucking motions.
Well, the truth is I've always Natalie seems like a fine person, but she always seemed a little bit unhinged to me. So I don't think, I think maybe it is God's will. Now, I need to tell you this story because we're going to get off the phone, but I need to tell you the story before we get off the phone because I think you'd really get a kick out of it. And the Dopey Nation too. You see, I don't think you've been talking to the Dopey Nation enough. I think you've just been venting to me, which I love. You've always been me and Aurora get into conversations, and I need to tell her something, but she does this. She filibusters with her own life constantly, right, Aurora?
I don't agree with that.
You don't?
I don't agree. Well, actually, I do agree.
You do that. But anyway, so check this out, okay? I've been going, and Dopey Nation, those who go to meetings, I would love to hear your input about this. I started going to this meeting in Suffolk County on Long Island. It's a beach meeting, okay? It's called Beach Bums, right? And it's mostly, older people. I'm one of the youngest people there. And they meet at 8 in the morning on the beach. You with me so far?
I'm with you.
And it's very, very beautiful. Okay. It's very beautiful. Like this, you know, the sun is just over the fucking bay. And even if it's raining, it's beautiful. Like this time I get out there and they're all sitting in the sand. Usually they're sitting in a wooden gazebo. Okay. Do you feel like your story isn't closed up? Do you feel like I left you hanging on the Natalie story?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Because I want you to feel like that's finished before I move on. Because sometimes I do that.
No, I feel good about it.
I'm excited to hear what happens, and I'll let the Dopey Nation know. Okay? And I'll get back. Okay. So I walk up to the beach, and it's fucking beautiful. And the sun is like, you know, hanging in the sky, and there's clouds moving in front of it, and it's like the bright light is flashing, strobing in the fog of the clouds, and I'm like, holy shit, what a beautiful morning it is to be at a meeting. And I sit down, and the woman is doing the opening reading, and she reads the preamble, and then the chair of the meeting starts to, I don't know, describe the format of the meeting, and this dude interrupts, okay? And he says, wait, Tara, I have to go to a group, but I really need to share before I go. And so we're like, all right, you know, and you don't see that. Do you ever see that happen, Rora?
No.
So no. It's very like, what do you call that? It's not normal for that to happen. And you're kind of like, what the fuck is going on? You know what I mean? Like when you break format in a meeting. Do you know what I mean? Like people don't do that. So I'm like kind of anxious to see what this guy's going to do. And he's probably in his early 60s. He's a very heavy guy, mustache, kind of classic Long Island guy. And he goes, so, you know, I'm getting to the end of my outpatient program, and I decided I was going to go golfing. And I haven't been golfing in a long time. So I get my golf bag and I get out there, and I'm not looking so good on the green and blah, blah, blah. You know, and he's just talking. And I'm like, what the fuck? Did this guy interrupt the fucking, you know, the format, the chair, to talk about his golf game, you know, when he says, and I went in my golf bag and I found this. And he pulls out a full bottle of Absolut vodka, okay, on the beach. He pulls out the fucking full bottle of Absolut vodka. And he says, and everyone's like, you know, and it's like everyone's just bugged out, you know, because a bunch of people in the meeting don't have any time. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't have any time. And he pulls out the fucking vodka, and he's like, well, I was thinking after my outpatient program is done, I could just drink this. But instead, I'm going to do this. And he opens up the vodka, okay, on the beach in an AA meeting, and he starts to pour it on the sand in front of him, okay?
Nice.
And the woman next to him starts screaming, no, I don't want the smell. And everyone's just bugged out, okay? And behind me, there's a homeless guy, and he goes, right on, brother. That's the way to do it, you know. And then somebody else is like, pour it in the sand. And there's like a million bees. And they're like, maybe the bees are going to go to the vodka. So he gets up and he pours the vodka out behind him. Okay. And it stinks. It stinks of vodka. Okay. It's lucky. I you know, like, and the people are fucking triggered. Everyone's losing their minds. Like, you know what I mean? They're like, oh my God, you know. And then he's like, all right, I got to go. And he gets up and he leaves for his outpatient program.
Is this a true story?
Do you think I can make, do you think I'm creative enough to make this story up?
I love it. That sounds like a great fucking meeting.
It's insane, right?
It doesn't sound that weird. No, I mean, it sounds like your usual fucking crack-a-lacka bullshit, you know?
And then there's a dude at the meeting who calls himself Smiling Joe.
Nice.
Because he always has a smile for everybody. I like Joe. And he goes, now that was a classic newcomer. He goes, self-centered, not thinking about how his actions are going to affect the group. Classic new alcoholic in recovery. Good stuff, you know? And it was like,
exactly.
Yeah, he totally framed it perfectly. But what do you think? Like, that's a classic story, right?
Yeah, I love it.
I know.
That's a great meeting.
And the meeting was good.
Make that your home group.
Well, I can go there like once or twice a week, but I do love to go there. It's fucking awesome. But they only meet from March to November because it's right on the beach. It's outside. But now say goodbye to the Dopey Nation because we got to get Amy Dresner on.
All right, Dopey Nation. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Listen, Aurora.
Yeah.
Next time you come on, you can't just tell relationship stories. You got to tell like drug stories or something, recovery stories. What's the lesson? So the lesson of the Natalie story is she probably wasn't worth keeping, and it's God doing for you what you couldn't do for yourself.
I mean, that's one lesson you can take from it. I mean, all will be revealed, Dave. I don't know. But, you know, it's just the shit I'm going through today.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you calling in, Rora.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey.
Amy Dresner. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I didn't tell the audience what I put you through last night. Why don't you tell the audience? Do you want to tell them? Tell them, because I want to hear you say
it. I used to abuse. It's fine. Okay. Dave kept pushing it later and later and later, and then we did 20 minutes of a really good interview, and he fucked up the sound, and then realized we had to do it over. So we started over again, and then he fucked up the sound again, and then I just said, bro, why don't we just, like, you seem tired, like, let's just reschedule for the tomorrow. And he was like, okay, I'm really sorry, please don't be mad. And I was like, dude, I'm not mad at all, don't ever call me again. No, I'm kidding. I was like, and here we are.
So that yes, it was. But you know, it's so stupid. Like, I worked so late yesterday and I came home.
Yeah, you were tired. You were up at 5:30 and it was like 11:30 your time, and it was cuckoo.
That's commitment to the podcasting process though, isn't it?
Yeah, I was very impressed by that, actually. Yeah.
You were impressed by my podcasting ineptitude? Because if you want to know the truth...
Your commitment to it, that you were like, oh, even though I'm fucking exhausted, you know, and I've been up for fucking, you know, 14 hours, I'm still going to fucking whatever, you know?
The truth is, though, I love Dopey, and I love making the show, and I was so excited to have you come on, and we had made a date, and, you know, in recovery, you do what you say you're going to do, right? Isn't that the whole fucking deal?
Right. Of course. Absolutely. You keep your commitments. Absolutely.
There's, like, nothing else. You know, sometimes...
Hey, you keep your fucking word. It doesn't matter how you feel. You fucking do it.
Exactly. But, you know, you want to know...
That's the big difference.
You know what I fucked up with it? Is I didn't plug in the microphone. I plugged the microphone into the board, but I didn't plug the board into the computer. And I recorded like 20 minutes with my dad before you got on.
You told me that. Oh.
And they weren't great. You know, the Dopey Nation loves my dad. And I love my dad too, but I don't, you know, it wasn't the best 20 minutes. And I know he's very disappointed because he loves to come on the show. So, Dopey Nation, just know that my dad will come on eventually. I know my dad would love you, Amy. He would get such a kick out of you.
I mean, I've actually done another podcast with someone, and they kept fucking up the sound. We literally redid it like 3 or 4 times, and I was a totally good sport about it. And it's like, you know, I'm you know, thrilled and fucking honored to be on. So it's just like, you know, shit happens. I don't get tweaked out about stuff like that anymore. It's like, whatever. Okay, cool. We'll redo it.
Well, you might as well. I mean, I was thinking about it. Every podcast that you go on is like an amazing opportunity to sell books. I mean, you have a book, and like all of the podcasts you go on are about like addiction, recovery. I saw this. What is this new one? The Pleasure Chest? That's some sex thing?
Oh, that's a sex store in L.A. I'm doing a reading with Erica Garza about her porn and sex addiction. And August McLaughlin, who wrote a book called Girl Boner, like about like, you know, having a more satisfying sex life. And they invited me to come on and be part of the live podcast and do a reading. I'll probably read, you know, about sex addiction. It's like reading about sex and mental illness and intimate writing and blah, blah. So I was like, you know, yeah, you can come and, you know, hear me and buy a book and get some nipple clamps and a dildo at the same time. Like, hello.
Are you into, like, I saw that post. Like, I saw two nipple clamp posts on your Facebook page.
And no, I'm not into nipple clamps at all. I'm not into any of that weird shit.
What about, like, scented lube? I think I saw you mention something about scented lube. Are you into scented lube?
No, I'm not into scented lube.
Are you into any weird shit like that?
Is that where we're going?
I'm just curious. I mean, you're doing the pleasure chest. It's all this sex stuff.
No,
I'm just curious.
It's self-booked. It's like, you know, I mean, I've done it all. Have I been fucking hogtied and all kinds of weird shit? Yes, I've done all that shit. I've been, you know, had a ball gag. I've done it all. Honestly,
have you done the nipple clamps, or you didn't do the nipple clamps?
No, I didn't do nipple clamps. You know, I just thought that sounded funny, and I was like, and people are into that. I don't know, so I just wrote it.
One time, no, but I think it is funny. But there's a funny story too.
I'm into normal fucking sex, like that's hot between two people with like a lot of coconut oil, and that's it.
All right,
and that's it.
Well, I think that's that. I think me too. I'm with you on that. I like that stuff too.
I'm not weird. I'm not, you know, it's like I ruin my shit with toys. Like, if you're a girl and you like use those shoulder massagers, like, basically no guy can ever compare to that. And then you're like, no one can ever get you off. So I had to like go 2 years without like that shoulder massage. I was like addicted to that thing. And then
are you actually talking about a shoulder massager, or is that like a euphemism for a vibrator?
Yeah, no, a lot of girls use it. A lot of girls use it for a vibrator. Yeah, it's very common.
Okay. Do you know, one time years ago, I was walking down the street and I ran into my, you know, my podcasting partner Chris with his girlfriend. And they had just, and Chris just died, as I'm sure everybody knows. And they had just come out of this sex store, Babeland. And ironically, they had bought nipple clamps. Okay.
Wow. And
I think for both of them. Okay. I think it was for both of them. And then like, and I never would shut up about it. And then finally when he used them, and when I was like, dude, how was it? He was like, I found it very constraining.
That's hilarious.
I know.
Constraining.
So
yeah, I don't like pain with my sex. I like, you know, a little, like slap me on the ass a little bit, pull my hair, and that's kind of the extent of it. You know what I mean? I guess I'm kind of vanilla that way. I'm not really into like all kinds. I'm not like into being tied up. That's just, it doesn't do anything for me.
No, meaning...
Like, I'd rather a guy hold me down. If you can hold me down with your body weight, that to me is hotter than, like, you know, being able to do, like, a sailor knot.
Right. It's funny, like, you know? Who gets turned on by, like, your ability to tie knots? I think that's funny. I remember, like, whenever anybody wanted more than just a little bit of a beating, it was scary. Like, if they wanted
like, wow, that's like some trauma there for sure.
There's something going on. So yeah. I had, before you called in, my friend Aurora was on the show for, you know, a few minutes for a little while. And the first thing that she just moved to Los Angeles like this year. And she said she went to a meeting in Beverly Hills and you spoke and it blew the brains out of her head. And your message is still with her. And I like to fuck with Aurora.
Really?
Because usually...
Beverly Hills? I'm speaking Beverly Hills that often. Was this when she recovers that I spoke at?
No, it wasn't the convention. It was like when she just got
Beverly
there.
Beverly Hills? Maybe, really? When was this?
It was, I don't know, probably last winter or late fall.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. I said, well, what was the gist of Amy's message... That because I was trying to test her because I figured she was just bullshitting because she knew you were on the show, but she said it was about discipline and stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah. Oh my God, she's fucking right. Yeah, wow.
So Aurora wasn't lying.
No, I mean, I have a whole bit about stability and discipline, and it's in the book, and it's like basically that two things. One is, you know, I've been waiting my whole life to feel like I wanted to do something. Like, I suffer from a lot of depression. My dad had said to me, you know, years ago, discipline creates stability. Stability doesn't create discipline. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And I finally got it. Like, if you're waiting to feel like you want to get sober, you're waiting to feel like you're going to exercise or to write a book or whatever, you wait forever. You take the fucking action and that changes the way that you feel. It's like, and that's very 12 step. It's contrary action. And it's like, but then you go even further, which is like, you don't have to be a good person. You just have to act like one. And if you keep doing something over and over and over again, that becomes your new default neural pathway, and that's you. That action is your character. You are that person now. You don't have to think about it. It's your natural way of being.
Right.
To fake it, you are that. So that's what kind of I was talking about.
Right.
That's one of the things I talk about.
Like,
because that's what really shifted in this sobriety for me.
Now, you were in and out of sobriety a lot, right? Could you lay that out? Lay that out, like your ins and outs.
Oh, my God. I got a year when I was 24 from Crystal. I tried drinking. I was in a blackout for like 3 weeks. I was like, okay, no. Then I stayed dry on my own for like 6 or 7 years. No program. You can do it, but I was really unhappy and I didn't change at all. Like, I didn't grow. My life was super small. And then I drank and I tried to kill myself. And then I was making out with some loser standard. He blew pot smoke in my mouth. And then I was high for the first time in 7 years. And I was like, oh, I can smoke pot because I hate pot. And I haven't done shit in 7 years.
So you had you had 7 years of sobriety in that moment. Was in-
Yeah, dry.
Dry.
Yeah.
You weren't like working a program. You weren't.
No. I did not like AA in the beginning at all. And it's like I still have some issues with it. It's more I have issues with the fellowship and I have issues with people who are fundamentalist and weird about it. It's like, so I've written pieces about like how I don't believe in anonymity and stuff like that. Like I piss off some people.
What do you mean you don't believe in anonymity?
I think it's actually outdated and...
But you believe in it. You just don't like it. You don't think people should practice anonymity.
Yeah, I'm not anonymous. And there was a celebrity who would not blurb my book because I broke the 11th tradition. And I was like, okay. I think that was in the 30s and it's fucking 2018 and we have celebrity rehab and we have intervention and... When you say you're in recovery, people assume that you're in a 12-step program, and it's in fucking a zillion movies and TV shows where people are in meetings, and South Park did it, and it's like, it's out. And I think that doing, like, if you have to do that, I think that we need to break the stigma of recovery to break the stigma of addiction. And so I'm proud to be in recovery. It's the hardest thing I ever fucking did, and I think that a lot of people think it's some creepy Christian cult, and... How can people fucking be attracted if they don't know you're fucking in it?
Well, it's funny.
It doesn't make sense to me.
I had I used to have this sponsor, and he was an old Jewish guy, and he was annoying as fuck, but I really loved him. You know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
I understood him. You know, and he was like the first sponsor I ever had that I understood and I liked to talk to. I also liked that he was much older, so I didn't have to like feel like you're full of shit kind of thing. I only did a little bit.
Right.
But, I was doing dopey, and he was a hater. He said one of his character defects was that he was always negative. Like, his wife called him Dr. No, because he said he didn't like anything. And he also was married, I think, 5 times. So he's got problems, just so we're clear. So I'm doing dopey. We had probably done dopey for, like, 2 years. And, like, you know, the subject of our anonymity would come up all the time. Like,
mm-hmm.
Everybody is like, why, you know, you're so full of shit. Everybody knows who you are, blah, blah, blah. And I would always say, well, I don't really want anyone to Google my last name and have heroin pop up because of my daughter. You know, I don't want her friends to Google our last name and see heroin. You know, I don't want that. But anyway, so that's why I didn't do it. And Chris was just very concerned that somehow all of the ridiculous shit he did would interfere with him becoming a doctor. Like that they would.
I understand all of that. I totally understand that. And I don't break anyone else's anonymity. Let me be clear.
No.
I do not break other people's.
But then let me just tell you what Paul said. Let me just tell you what he said.
Okay.
He said, the reason you shouldn't do it is because, you know, and this is, it was interesting to me and it was kind of annoying. But what he said was, because if you relapse, like, and most people do, then it shows the world that it didn't work.
Okay, I disagree. Sorry, I wrote a piece about this.
All right, so break it down.
AA does. exchange rate is like 5%.
Here, say that again. Yeah, we dipped out. Hold on, the phone dipped out for a second. So say that again.
It doesn't work for a lot of people. A relapse is more common than staying sober. From the rate within AA is like 5%, and AA is not the only way or best way to get sober. It's the way I chose to get sober and what works for me. And I think that that's fucking bullshit. It's like, if you have cancer and you get chemotherapy and you still fucking die, do people think chemotherapy doesn't work? No, they don't.
I like your forthrightness, and I like that you've really thought this thing out.
I've written pieces about it. I think it's super... This girl wrote to me, and she said, I've always been creeped out by AA, but you wrote about it so openly, and you seem cool, and you made it seem cool, and could I meet you at a meeting? And I said, yes. I met her at a meeting, and that bitch is sober now. So, you know, anonymity helped that bitch get sober. That's all I have to say.
I was totally creeped out by AA forever.
Totally, me too.
The only reason that it worked for me is because I needed it to. I was just too fucked up. I needed to be told what to do, and I needed to like go through the steps in order to get better. Personally,
but also it doesn't work. What, it doesn't work because you relapse? It's like the fact that we're sober at all for a day is a fucking miracle. And relapse, if you believe that it's really a disease, relapse is part of most diseases.
So, right. Some sort of reoccurrence, you know, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that we need to accept that as part of it. It's, you know, that book was written in the 30s. It's a very, very different time. I realize that I'm someone who's written an addiction memoir. I write for an addiction magazine. I don't have children. Like, I have the freedom to be completely out with it.
Does it bug you?
Not everyone has that freedom.
What's your take on children, no children kind of thing? Does it bug you that you don't have children? Do you care? Do you want to have children? Like, what's your thought?
No, I'm too old now to have children. But I just didn't have my shit together.
Fucking Janet Jackson had baby at 50.
No, I don't have my. I mean, financially, I don't have my shit. I'm really like focusing on my career.
Right.
I think children really change your life. I think I'm probably too selfish to have children. I have also a lot of addiction and mental illness in my family that I don't necessarily want to pass on.
Right.
I wouldn't want to be a single parent.
I understand.
I got pregnant once and I was going to have a kid and I miscarried right away. So I just think that the universe is like, no children for you, bitch.
Right.
Like, you know, I have sponsees, I have friends, I have, you know, I just...
You have your cat, ridiculous cat.
I have Colonel Puff Puff. Yeah, he's my baby.
I think
that I'll regret it when I'm older. Like now, like that I'm taking care of my mom with dementia and stuff like that. Like, who's going to take care of me when I'm older? Like, that's fucking scary.
You don't know what's going to happen. I feel very lucky that, like, you and I are sort of slowly becoming friends and getting to know each other a little bit. And I like that. And I think it's very possible. You don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
You're right.
You know, the world.
I mean, I'd like someone terrific. I'm ready for like a really good relationship. I feel like I've worked on myself and I'm like ready for someone terrific to come into my life.
How, and like, so where are you at with that?
I got my heart broken a year and a half ago. We were together like 2 years and I haven't been with anyone since.
So you've identified yourself as a sex addict or a recovering sex addict, and you told me that you've been celibate for how long?
A year and a half.
So how's that?
It's fine. It's real. I mean, I was so skinny and I was so depressed after the breakup, and I was so stressed about the promotion of the book. I really didn't have much of a sex drive, and I don't go on Tinder or on any of those dating sites. It scares me because I don't want to go back to that place that I was, you know, and in the program, they're like, you're sexually anorexic. It's like, I'm not sexually anorexic. I actually value myself now. I know what it's like to have sex with someone you give a fuck about instead of it just being some, you know, some hope, like hookup with some stranger for a thrill.
Right.
And I am cool with waiting. You know, I'm old. I want a boyfriend. I want to get married again. And it's like, I'm cool with waiting, you know? And now I see really the red flags. I used to be just so desperate to be loved. and that I just would overlook every red flag. And now when I see a red flag, I really see it, you know? It's like, oh, that's who that person is. Cool, I'm out. You know? It's like, not that I'm perfect or anything like that, but, like, there are certain things where, you know, people tell you who they are. Believe them. Because, right, you know, don't pretend to be surprised later. But there was the other day where I was very frustrated with the situation, and an old urge came, and I was like, God, I want to smoke a cigarette, or I want to fucking hurt myself, or I want someone to just fuck my brains out. And then I was like, okay, that's like really old addicty behavior. And I thought, I called my trainer, I worked out, I called my sponsor, and then I went to a meeting.
Is your trainer that Doug guy?
Yeah.
He wants to come on Dopey. What's his deal?
He's great. He's not 12-step. He got sober in jail.
All right.
Have him on. I mean, you know, he's very fitness oriented.
He's very fitness. I thought he lived here. I thought he lived in Massachusetts or something.
He lives in Maryland.
So why is he out there?
He's not. He's in Maryland, and we Skype.
Wow, you'd Skype train.
Yeah, it works great.
That's amazing.
He's like my little brother.
All right, that's cool. What I really want to do before we move on is, like, I feel like I've deprived the Dopey Nation, like, a good, solid Dopey story, like Aurora's story.
You want one of my fucking gnarly stories?
I want the seizure on the plane with the non-book story, and then we have a Dopey exclusive, right?
Okay. All right. So, I was shooting cocaine, and my parents shipped me off to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they were like, you know, she'll be sober there. She doesn't have any contacts. She has no friends. My mother was living there. Within 3 days, I found a coke dealer. And at that time, this was like, God, this was years ago. You could get syringes over the counter without a prescription, and you couldn't in L.A. So, of course, they moved me there, and I'm shooting coke. And I end up with a health problem, and I have to fly back to L.A. to get it taken care of at Cedars-Sinai because the hospitals in Santa Fe and Albuquerque are not that great.
So your dad had shipped you to your mom's, and you had scored coke in Santa Fe.
Oh, yeah. I was just shooting coke and smoking cigarettes, like, the entire time. Yeah. It was awful. I mean, it was...
How old were you? Okay. I just want to have a picture in my head. You're 37. You're getting to be like, you've probably been in and out of this shit a million times, and here you are.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have some sort, what's the medical problem, or you don't want to say?
I'll let that go.
Thank
you.
Yes.
So I flew to L.A., and I had to, I stayed up all night doing coke in a hotel, and then I had my dealer meet me at the hospital before I had this outpatient procedure, and he met me, and he dropped off a bunch of cocaine in front of Cedars Sinai.
Wow.
And then I did snorted rails of coke in the cancer bathroom at Cedars Sinai. And I remember feeling like the biggest piece of shit because it was like, hey, if you're having chemotherapy, flush twice, and people are fighting for their lives, and I'm killing myself with drugs. And I was like, but it didn't stop me, of course.
And Amy, you weren't getting chemotherapy, right?
No.
So why were you in the cancer bathroom?
That was just what they were doing. The procedure was in that wing.
Right. So you got all this coke and you start fucking snorting coke in.
Yeah. And I remember very clearly, if you've had chemotherapy, there's a sign above the toilet. If you're having chemotherapy, flush the toilet twice. And I just thought, God, I'm going to hell. Like, I'm doing fucking blow in a fucking cancer bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, does it get gnarlier than, like, wow.
Yeah.
And after the procedure, I flew back, and I don't know, I think I put the bag of coke, like, in my underwear, like, maybe a little bit up in my pussy, I can't really remember, and I
got on the flight, and I went to use the bathroom, and I got down, I closed the toilet on the flight, on the plane, and, you know, the high altitude makes drugs and alcohol hit you much, much more.
Right.
And I didn't really know that. So I laid out some lines on the top of the toilet in the airplane bathroom, and the next thing I know, I'm on the floor. And I've bitten my tongue, and I've had a seizure. And I come to, and I'm like, what the fuck? And my tongue is bleeding, and I'm like, whoa. And I thought, fuck, I just had a fucking seizure. Because at this point, I have epilepsy from crystal meth. And I've had epilepsy for, like, 10 years now. But that doesn't stop me from fucking doing coke or shooting cocaine. As you know, I shot cocaine in a bike helmet. When I would shoot cocaine and I would fucking have a seizure, instead of going, oh, I shouldn't
epilepsy. You'd put on the helmet.
Wearing a bike helmet so I didn't crack my fucking head open. And I was like, it's a high impact sport. Like, we'll wear protective gear. I get it. Like, which is just the insanity of addictions. Like, how do I get what I want and minimize the consequences?
Well, hold on, hold on, hold on. When you came to in the, you came to on the plane in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So nobody knew. You like, no. Only you knew.
No. Oh, yeah.
See, that, I mean, that's what, I had a seizure on a plane before takeoff. I was going on a business trip, and I was in, just in the aisle, and I had a seizure in the chair, and I wake up, and they're wheeling me off the plane. And I'm like, and I'm like, why are you, I said, I just fell asleep. What are you doing? And they were like,
you're very disoriented. Yeah.
And I had seizures all the time, and I didn't have epilepsy. I had seizures, and I did a bunch of crystal when I lived in Los Angeles, but I had a million seizures because of benzos. Because whenever I would stop taking benzos.
Oh, you're coming off benzos. You're fucking, you'll totally seize coming off that.
A million times. And like, I feel like you got kind of lucky that nobody saw you seizing.
Oh yeah, but that's, believe me, that was one time. Are you telling? You know how many times I've woken up, been outside a fucking diner, and fucking face planted and had a seizure, broke a tooth, some asshole put a spoon in my mouth because they didn't want me to bite my tongue, and there's blood all over the sidewalk, and I come to with paramedics all over me,
right?
And they reported to the DMV. I've lost my license twice.
How many seizures do you think you've had? Like, infinite seizures?
15.
Wow.
Grandma.
That's a lot. And I remember in your book, you talk about, like, and I don't know if it's seizure-related or you had a trauma to your head, right?
Oh, yeah. That was when I was in the psych ward. So that was after I went. Well, I had a seizure, and they shot me full of Ativan, and I was like, holy fuck, like, intravenous Ativan, amazing.
Yeah, I really liked Ativan. Like,
I was like, oh my fucking God, and I went on an Ativan run after that.
Right.
And I was in a blackout for like 2 weeks, like, in meetings, like, in AA meetings, like, kicking over chairs, being like, I'm a princess, motherfucker, and I don't even remember any of it.
Right.
And I even tried to, like, get, like gross dudes from AA to come and fuck me, and I was so crazy and out of it and high that no one would. And they were like, they were just like, you need to go to sleep. Like, you're way too out of it. And I was like, what? So, my dad was like, I kept calling my dad saying I wanted to die, and I was high the whole time. This is all in a blackout, like, right, 2 weeks. And my dad goes, I think you need to go somewhere and cool out. And I was like, you mean like a spa? And he was like, yeah, kind of, Ames. And so I checked myself into a psych ward thinking it was a spa. I was so fucking high.
He was like, it's kind of like a spa, but it's also kind of like a mental institution.
Fucking, I come to, and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, well, they told me it was a spa. That's why I brought my bathing suit. They were like, oh my fucking God, she's crazy.
That's awesome. Are there any spots, are there any mental institutions that are, like, really nice where you could, like,
not that I've been in. I mean, I'm sure they exist, but not that I've been in.
I wonder if, like, Silver Hills has, like, a wing with jacuzzis. And
I'm sure there's really nice ones, but I've never been in those. But so they fucked with my seizure meds. And so when I got out of the psych ward, I had a seizure and I fell backwards and I cracked my head open.
Right.
And that is when, yeah.
But what you describe in the book that I loved, you said that after you had the brain injury, you felt freer and more fearless and able to do things that you weren't able to do before that. Is that true?
I have like a weird story about life. Like I was like, it just rearranged all of my priorities and I just, it's like I could have died. It was like amazing. I mean, I had a concussion for a year. I was like every day the neurologist would come in and ask me to spell world backwards and I couldn't do it and he would leave the room.
Here, spell world backwards now.
D-L-R-O-W.
D-L... No, world. D-L-R-O-W, right. That's such a weird word to spell backwards, though.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard anyway, or it has, you know... But it was like, I literally just would talk in loops. I'd repeat myself constantly. I couldn't remember anything. I had stitches in my head. It was bad. And I was, like, really weird for, like, a year. Like I'd be in meetings and people would be talking and I'd be, like, laughing my ass off. Like, the feeling was off. Or people would tell something funny and I'd be crying. And then I'd punch that lesbian that I had a crush on because she didn't like me.
Right. And you think that was...
Even though I'm straight.
Right. Well, you want everyone likes to be liked.
It made me very violent and weird. And so, anyway, after I had the seizure on the plane, I walked back to my seat and I said to the guy, how long was I in the bathroom? And he said about 7 minutes.
Wow.
And I said, okay. And I didn't tell him anything, but I just... Because you have no sense of time, you know, and I did not get clean.
But I love the fact that even though I derailed you as good as I can, you got to the end of the seizure in the bathroom on the plane story. That's recovery right there. I mean, like, that really, that's it.
That's just being a fucking writer. Fucking be like, I'm going to end just being belligerent about storytelling. I'm going to finish this fucking story.
No, but that's commitment right there. That's it, right? I mean, that's amazing. Like, I'm very impressed with that. That's something that me and Chris would never do. We would, like, tangent everywhere, and we would never get to the end of the story, ever. That was probably the weakest link of Dopey, is that we never finished a story. That's funny. Because you just totally, like, solved... You were like, shut the fuck up, Dave. I was in the bathroom, and then I went back to my seat, and he said, you know, I think that's so cool. I love that. And Amy wrote this book, My Fair Junkie, and it's a great book, and it's super funny. And you told me the other day, your friend told you that, what's her face? Fucking Natalie Portman.
They saw Natalie Portman reading it in a fucking restaurant.
Now, are you sure she wasn't reading Kat Marnell's book?
Fuck you. It was my friend, and she said, I'm at Angelini, and Natalie Portman's here, and guess what the fuck she's reading? You gotta get here right now.
Did you go?
I was asleep.
You should have...
Now I'm 145 years old, and I'm fucking tired, and I'm sober, and I'm working my ass off and dealing with my mom's dementia, and, you know, I was in bed. But, you know, I'm not someone who's a star fucker. I wouldn't have gone up to her anyway and been like, that's my book. How do you like it? Like, that's not me. That's not my style.
But you could have showed up there. You could have showed up there, like, casual. Like, you run to the restaurant. You're, like, you know, trying to look casual. You sit near her, and you're like, oh, well, what are you reading there, Natalie Portman?
I wish you would fucking tweet about it. Shit, man. Sell some books. Yeah, and I told you, and I mean, all I can say is that it's been optioned for TV development. That's all I can say.
Well, maybe Natalie Portman wants to play Amy.
Maybe. I mean, if we can ugly her up a little bit.
She's Jewish, right?
Yeah, but she's like fucking, like, drop dead beautiful. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, it's like you have to smoke like 100 cigarettes. My voice is lower now that I've stopped vaping and smoking than it ever was. I'm like, what the fuck?
When did you start? No, your voice sounds great. Your voice doesn't sound very low. I think your voice sounded lower.
People think I'm a man on the phone. Dave, seriously.
Everyone thinks my dad is a woman on the phone. He's got a very high voice. And like,
I gotta meet your dad. Oh my god, we have so much in common already.
Yeah, my dad would love you, and he's listening now. His name is Alan. You should say hi.
Say, hi, Alan.
He's gonna be like, oh, that Amy Dresner. She's so funny. She's really, really wonderful. That's what he'll say. Oh, what a wonderful guest she was.
So sweet.
So you got your book is being optioned into a television show. That's super exciting. You told me another story that I think you should tell on Dopey. That story when you were shooting or whatever and you saw the crystal in the street. The fucking crystal meth, the bag of crystal meth.
Oh, I wasn't shooting anything. I was just walking.
Oh, I meant shooting. In my mind, you were shooting the show, not shooting drugs, by the way. Sorry.
Oh, no, we haven't started shooting the show yet.
So you were, whatever, you were walking down the street.
No. I went to go get coffee. It was the day after. It was like the weekend. It was like the next couple days after Pride. And I live in West Hollywood, which is like gay boy central, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Pride is like very big there. And I'm walking to get coffee. And I always look down at my feet. I'm not very confident. And I don't know what it is. I'm just always looking downward. That's kind of my thing. I'm trying to change that. But and I saw a huge, huge bag of like really good crystal meth, like glass, like clear, like really good shit. And it was like not just a quarter; it was like a half gram or something like that. You know what I mean? It was like big.
It was a big piece.
I fucking freaked out, and I hadn't seen crystal in years, and that was my drug of choice until it gave me epilepsy, and then I was like, okay, bye. And I couldn't stay away from it. Like, I walked up the street, and I was like, just go get your coffee. Like, you're 5 years, 5.5 years sober. Like, you're not going to do it. Like, shut the fuck up. And then I was, like, magnetized back to it again. And I was just, you know, and I was thinking about that line in the fucking big book. They're like, we will recoil like a moth from a hot flame. And I'm like, I was fucking, like, crowding around it like a warm campfire. I could not fucking stay away from it.
Right.
And I was picking it up, and there was a hole in it, and a little bit got on my finger, and a voice in my head was like, smell it. And I was like, oh, fuck. I'm getting too close now.
Did you smell it?
No.
Okay.
And I was like maybe a little, but I didn't snort it. I just was like, you know, and then I called one of my producers who's also in program, and I just said, who I'd just been talking to, and I sent him a picture, and I said, I am on the street. There's a huge bag of crystal. My neighbors who are sober are away. I'm having a really hard time in my life. I don't want to use, and I'm paralyzed around this. I don't know what the fuck to do.
Right.
And he was just like, okay, I'm going to call you on FaceTime, and we're going to fucking flush it together. And I was like, okay. So we FaceTimed, and I took it, and I walked into my house, and I flushed it.
So you have you have the producer on the phone with you. You're holding the phone. You leave your house. You go to the street to pick up the bag.
I was still on the street. Okay. When I called him. I was like, I am here. There's a huge bag of crystal. I can't get away from it. I don't know what to fucking do. I don't want to use. I haven't been this way in a long time. And it's like, you know, people go, well, that means something's wrong with your recovery, or you're not connected enough to your higher power. And it's like, you know what? Fuck you. You know what matters? I didn't fucking use. I called and I didn't use. You know what? I'm a drug addict. I will always, people go like, oh, you know, it's like, I will always love drugs. I will always love getting fucking loaded. Like, I see a syringe, or if I work out and see a big ropey vein, like, it's triggering to me. And it's like, you know what? It's like, you know, they're repulsed by it all. Great for them. But I don't think means I'm doing anything wrong with my program. I have a fucking 3 sponsees. I have a fucking sponsor. I fucking go to meetings. I do my shit. I do my steps. And it's like, you know what matters? You can't control your thoughts or your feelings. All you can control is your fucking action. And that's what I did.
No, totally. And I think, like,
you know,
and you are honest. And you, I mean, the question that I have, I think the scariest, and when I go over it in my head, okay, the scariest part is when you actually bring it into the house. Like, I think when I would get scared, because it would be like, it was, you know what I mean? Like, you have it in your house.
My sponsor was, yelled at me. He was like, why would you fucking put it in your pocket and bring it in your house? Like, what if you'd had a seizure and then the police fucking find you and you have a fucking bag of fucking dope on you?
Right.
And you're going to say, oh, I just saw it on the street and I was going to go flush it? Like, never, ever, ever. He goes, you should have just ground it into the fucking ground with your foot and just, like, dispersed it into the asphalt. But it's like, you know, whatever. I did what I did. And it's like, you know, like, he's very old school, like, NACA. Like, you don't even pick up newcomers because if a cop pulls you guys over, or take them to meetings, because if a cop pulls you over and they've got dope on them, they're going to throw it under the seat. And guess who's going to go to fucking jail for it? You. Because it's going to be in your car.
No, I hear you. I'm with your sponsor. I'm terrified of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that never even occurs to me. I used to drive, you know, newly sober people to meetings all the time. And I was like, okay, you know. And he's like, if they could get to a dealer, they can get to a meeting. Like, we don't call people. And I was like, okay.
That's awesome. And how much, you have 5.5 years? You have almost 6 years now, or you have 6 years now?
No, I have 6 years in January.
So that's so cool. And how do you feel?
Yeah. I feel great. I mean, my life's amazing. It's like, you know, it's not perfect, but it's like, I mean, magical shit's happening. Like, my career is, like, I mean, I'm so fucking thrilled that I wrote a book that's helped people. I get messages every day, and people are like, thank you for fucking being real. Thank you for fucking making me laugh about shit I was ashamed of. Thank you for giving me some fucking hope that I can get it still. You know what I mean? And I think that's what we need. That's why it's important to be out. Because we want people to fucking keep coming back. You know what I mean? And keep trying. Whatever way they get sober. Not, oh, you didn't do it right. You're ashamed. You're doing something wrong. Fuck all that.
Right.
That's like all that old-timer shit. It's killed so many newcomers who relapse. Like, you know, I know someone who has long, long-term sobriety. It took him 6 years to get 30 days. 6 fucking years.
Right. No, it took me like 14 years, 15 years to get 3 years. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and I've had 3 years a couple times. It's just like, so, you know, I mean.
When you wrote the book, though, let me ask you this. When you wrote the book, because, like, when me and Chris started to do Dopey, we didn't do it to help people. We did it to have fun, and we did it because we wanted to. And then the fact that it helped people was just, like, mind-blowing. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't expect it to help people. And then it was, like, our good time was, like, an inspiration to these people. And then it was, like, now it's, like, holy shit. And I really admire the fact that you wrote a book, and I really want to write a book. And I want you to teach me how to have discipline to write a book one day. Maybe you can coach me. Maybe you can.
Well, I'll tell you, when you get a fucking book deal, you know, you don't write the whole book and then sell it. You write a couple chapters and you write a proposal, which is an outline and your platform and testimonials and why you're writing the book. And that's how they sell it. And then you basically, if you get a deal, you've got 6 months to a year to write the book. And then, so, I mean, money is a big motivator, as well as the fact that I was like, okay, they're giving this ex-drug addict all this money, like, I need to fucking be on time. And so, I mean, my father's incredibly disciplined. Writing a book is a very different animal than writing, like, an article for The Fix, which is, like, 1,800 words, like, that I can write in an hour, and, like, with a bow on it. I mean, a book is a whole different thing. And then it goes through legal vetting, and it goes through an editor, and it goes through a copywriter, and da-da-da-da. It's like a whole fucking process. You know, it took like a year or two before it actually came out.
But how much of it, when you were fleshing it out, was about helping people, or how much of it was like you needed to get it out, you were a writer? Like,
oh, God, no. I wasn't about needing to get it out, because some of that stuff was really, really painful and embarrassing to write. Like, especially the sex stuff, I didn't want to write about that stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that stuff it's like, that's where you really feel like you're getting a look at something that maybe you're not supposed to see, which is why it's so powerful, you know?
Right. Yeah, that was the stuff I was like, I don't want to write about this, and I felt like, and, you know, depressed. And also, looking back on a lot of my youth, you know, I didn't have the denial I had at the time. I had a lot of clarity. And it was more painful because I had no excuses. I really got to see myself and my youth for what it was and how I was hurting people. And it was hard to write. So what I did, yeah, the sex stuff, I was like, oh God, I don't want to write that. Like that black dildo scene, I was like, I don't want to write this scene. I don't want to write this scene. And I, Jerry Stahl, who is a friend and a mentor, and I just did a reading with him, and he's fucking the raddest dude ever and so talented, and really wrote like the first modern addiction memoir in 95, Permanent Midnight. He has a quote, if you have the nerve to live what you lived, you should have the nerve to write it. And I was like, okay. So I set out to write the most honest fucking book I could, no matter how shitty it made me look. That's what I set out to do.
Well, you did it. You know, mazel tov on that.
Thank you.
Now, the question is, did you come through? Did you tell Jerry Stahl about Dopey?
He's really hard. Why? You want Jerry? I haven't talked to him. Oh, that's right.
You didn't do it. You had the reading and you didn't ask him about Dopey.
Oh, I'm so terrified at that reading. Are you kidding me? The whole day I was dealing with someone defrauding my mom's bank account.
Oh my
God. Like, I barely fucking got through the reading myself.
So the answer is no to that question.
No, but I will text him and ask him.
Listen,
relax.
No, my biggest problem with the movie of Permanent Midnight, not the book, is that Alf wasn't Alf. Wasn't that just the worst?
Well, movies always, I mean, that's what's scary about, like, having a TV deal. Like, it's like, yeah, it'll be fictionalized, but it's like, is it going to fucking blow? You know what I mean?
But
like,
we're talking about, he was
yeah,
the...
Yeah, but they couldn't. They probably couldn't for fucking legal reasons.
They should remake it with Alf and with the real voice of Alf, and it would be like... I love the movie and I love the book, but if Alf, I mean, you didn't watch bad TV like I did, right? You never watched Alf.
No.
Yeah. You should tell Jerry how much I loved Alf. He probably will totally lose it. He doesn't have any respect for me, but if he thinks that I admire him for Alf, he'll have less.
He's just weird about doing, like, he's weird. It was, like, really hard to get him to do that reading. He's just shy, you know? He's just shy, and he doesn't like to do publicity. He's not on social media, and you know what I mean? He's just kind of like an introvert, man. But it's like, you know, I mean, I doubt he'll do it. I mean, I'll ask him, but it's like, he's just, you know, he's got nothing to promote right now either, you know?
Eventually he'll do it. Eventually he'll do it.
You know, in terms of like books, like he was doing that reading with me, that was just to support me. So I was like, God, everyone must be so sick of my shit. Because I just had a reading at the 12-step store, and I just had fucking, you know, done that thing, and she recovers, and I just thought, I need a sideshow of someone else to fucking shake their titties and fucking work the pole, because everyone's sick of my ass. And, like, he read from, like, Baby Mutant Ninja, whatever the fuck it's called, and read from all these different books, and he was just so brilliant. I was, like, so intimidated to read after, because his style's so different than mine.
Does he look super cool? Does he dress in black and stuff?
Oh, yeah. He's always in black. And he always looks like he's going to, like, he looks deeply unhappy and like he's going to kill somebody.
Good for him.
Terrifying.
Good for him.
But I'm reading and he's like, I see him laughing and smiling. Like, he just, yeah, I make him laugh. And it's like, oh my God, thank God.
That is so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
And I love that you came on again. This was a tour de force appearance, by the way.
Thank you.
You've been on every podcast, right?
Not every.
You've been on a lot of podcasts. Now, and be honest with me, could there possibly have been a podcasting experience as good as this one? Just be honest. I mean, if it's true, like if Paul Gilmartin, Paul Gilmartin is more fun than me, that's fine. But I don't believe that could possibly be true.
Oh, God, Paul was like, if you don't fucking really fucking dig deep and fucking talk about the hard shit, like, I won't run it. I was like, oh, like, I fucking let it rip on that podcast. I was like, I really got into some uncomfortable shit on that podcast. But it's like, you know what? That's what this is about. That's what fucking people connect to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, what's there to be ashamed of? I mean, that's the thing, like, when the book came out, which is really, like, almost like, hey, like, here's a funny 4 steps that I published. It's like the most fucking gnarly shit I've ever done in my life that's fun and made funny and, like, in a book form for everyone. And it's like, I thought, there was a moment right before it came out, and I just thought, oh my God, what have I done? No one's ever going to fucking date me again. Like, everyone's going to know everything. And the response I got from readers was so loving, and they were like, you're my fucking hero, and you're so brave, and I helped them so much. And then I also just felt bulletproof. It's like, what else is there? There's nothing, like, there's freedom in owning your shit.
Right.
You don't have any shame. What's someone going to say? Like, I heard you tried to stab your ass, or I heard you shot coke in your neck, or I heard you fucking, you know, put a dildo up your ass for some fucking weirdo on Tinder. Like, okay, I wrote about it. Now what?
Right. Right.
And behind all that is feelings. Like, you can't tell me you've never felt self-hatred or self-destruction or done something sexually that you didn't want to do because you were afraid to not be cool, or the person was going to get mad, or you felt like you were too far in it to turn back, or everyone identifies with those feelings, or wanting to feel wanted, or want, you know what I mean? Like, it's all about the feelings, and everyone identifies, but those are universal.
No, definitely. Before you get off the phone, I feel badly that we didn't do this before. Aaron, your friend Aaron in North Carolina, has this event coming up. Why don't you plug Aaron's Enlighten Recovery event that you're going
to? Yeah, I can't believe you're not coming. Ugh.
How can I go? I'm too poor. I got to wait. You don't want. Nobody cares. Nobody cares if I'm not there. You know what?
That's not true.
Amy, will you do me a favor? Here, this is another, like, big thing. They, supposedly, there's some fucking award for me and for Chris. Why don't you accept the award on our behalf?
Really?
Yeah, would you do that? Yeah, that would be great.
Of course.
You'll do it?
Yeah, of course I will.
But I want you to prepare, like, a lot of talking about us. You got to do a little bit of research.
Shut up.
You got to listen to at least one episode before you do it. Okay. Hello? are you still there?
Yeah. Why don't you write something and I'll read it? I've got to fucking prepare my own speech.
So you don't want to prepare my speech while you're down there?
No, bitch. I don't want to prepare your own speech. But if you write something, I'll read it. And if you ask Erin, I mean, she's the boss. If she says I can accept it on your behalf and read your thing, I'm happy to do it.
No, she wanted me to get somebody down there to do it. And I don't. The only person I know down there isn't close enough to do it. So I want you to do it. You'll be my proxy.
Okay, well, fucking email your speech.
It'll be very short and sweet, I promise you.
Fine, that's fine. I am speaking at the Mindful Recovery and Wellness Symposium in Statesville, North Carolina, on October 26th, and it should be really dope. Nathaniel Dusk, my breathwork guy from my book, is going to come down and lead people through a whole breathwork session. There's Jane Barst, I think her name is going to be there. There's going to be harm reduction. There's going to be all kinds of cool shit. And I'm going to fly down and do that. And also, I'm doing a reading in Boston on October 12th at Timothy Gager's Last Dire Literary Series with a bunch of people. So,
wow. Are you going to make it up to New York?
No. Everyone's asking me that. And it's like, I want to. But it's like, I'm just going where people are like, hey, we've organized this. We want you to come. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, check this out. Like, coming soon.
I'm not important enough to be on a book tour.
Coming soon in New York City on the Lower East Side is going to be the first ever dopey storytelling jam, or as I like to call it, dopey con. And I want you to be there. So will you come when we do it?
Yes, I would love to. Did you hear my fucking thing? Did you hear my psych ward story on Anna David's Light Hustler?
No.
You're dick. It's hilarious.
Everything you do is hilarious. I'm sure it's hilarious.
It's really funny. People loved it. I would love to do that. Oh my God, a DopeyCon? Fuck yeah.
DopeyCon.
To go to New York.
Yeah, DopeyCon 2018. And I promise you, you can stay in my basement, luxury, an hour and a half outside of Manhattan, and I will feed you. How's that?
Fucking done.
Or you could sleep in my dad's house, and he lives in Manhattan. You could do one or the other.
Fucking great. Awesome. I'm fucking there, man.
You're the best. Super cool. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God. My pleasure. Buy my book, you guys.
Yeah,
Audible. It's fucking, you know.
It's on Amazon.
The paperback just came out on September 18th. It's super fucking gnarly and funny and honest and...
It's a beautiful book. Dopey Nation, and I wouldn't just say that. If you haven't read My Fair Junkie by Amy Dresner, you should totally go get it and read it because you guys will love it. It's built for the Dopey Nation. If you guys if they haven't read it, they should read it. And they're going to love that you came on, and I love that you came on, and it was awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Be in touch with me and,
absolutely.
And, and maybe I'll show up in North Carolina, but I doubt it.
I would love that. That'd be fucking amazing. Come on. Two Jews in North Carolina. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I just have a feeling that if I go, something bad is going to happen.
No, oh my God. Stop.
I don't know.
But I will take your award if you write me your thing. And if Aaron says yes, I will accept your award.
No, Aaron already said I could pick somebody and you'll be the most high profile person I could pick.
I'm honored to do that. I love that.
Okay. Send my best to all the big time recovery folks that you rub elbows with, okay?
Shut up. I don't do any of that shit.
Say hello to Jerry Stahl for me. Tell him that I really admire his work and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right.
Amy.
Okay.
Take care.
All right. Okay.
Later.
Bye.
So I got Amy back on the phone because I think Amy should end the show. Now, the way we end the show is we say, I say stay strong, Dopey Nation. And you have to say stay strong, Dopey Nation, and toodles. But hold on. First, we have to say we have to say you leave a review, you follow us on Instagram, you say follow us on Facebook, say all that stuff, you know, do all the promotion stuff.
All right.
You're not doing it. You have to tell them to follow us on Instagram.
You want to do it now?
Yeah, we're doing it. This is it.
Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. If we're on Twitter, I don't even know.
What do you mean? How could you not? That was something else I wanted to talk to you about. Like, I'm watching you on social media, and you put something up today about I don't even remember. But on Facebook, you complained that Instagram got more likes. Then the Facebook or the Instagram post got more likes.
I'm giving people shit. Oh yeah, because that shit was funny. I said I've had more psychiatrists than boyfriends, which is true.
That was
people
it.
People like, it was like 50 likes, and I was like, oh, you guys can suck my dick. I was like, I got 340 likes on Instagram. Fuck you.
See, I saw my sponsor this morning, and he was saying that I have to do actions and not worry about results. But then I see your post about being upset about likes. And
I was not upset. I was just giving people shit. I just, honestly.
I lose my shit. I'm crazy about social media. I take it down if I don't get enough likes. But
I used to do that. If people didn't like it, I would take it down. But I would take it down within like a couple minutes. And people are like, give it a chance, Amy. And now I don't care. I really don't care.
That's classic neurotic Jewish addict shit, right?
Of course. We can't change our fucking genes, shit. So,
all right. So you say follow us on everything, leave a review on iTunes, and then you have to say the thing. You know the thing?
Right. Okay. Follow us on everything: Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Leave a review on iTunes. Stay strong, Dopey Nation. Toodles.
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Later.
Okay. Bye.
That was the great Amy Dresner. Before I go, just know that I love you guys. I love that you listen. I love that you care. I love that the Dopey's meaningful to you. It's meaningful to me. So if you guys are worried about the Vice feud, if you care about it, there will be more on Vice coming soon. I just needed to lay low with it for a bit. But there should be more on Vice next week. The jury's out on what's going to happen with Vice and Dopey. But as they say in recovery, more will be revealed. Just want to say to everybody out there who's listening, who is struggling with drugs, with addiction, getting help is possible. It happened for me. It happened for Amy Dresner. It happened for Aurora. it happened for millions of people. All of us did it through 12-step, which isn't to say that you guys have to. But if you're on the fence or if you are struggling, you should fucking give it a shot, because you could die really easily. And I never thought that was fucking possible, that I mean, drug addiction kills people. We know that. But I never thought it was possible that it was going to happen. And I think about Chris every day, and I think about Todd every day, and it's and they didn't have to die, but they did, and the same goes for you guys. So talk to somebody, reach out for help. You know, I don't want to preach, but I'd rather preach and have some of you live than not preach at all. And I'm on a Bob Forrest Don't Die podcast, so to echo Bob, just don't die. Try to do the next right thing. Try to take care of yourselves. Stay strong. And toodles for Chris. And we love you and we miss you. And, you know, hope you're listening on a cloud someplace. Later.
I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder would it do me any good. Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be so good, so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And I wanna take a ride up in the sky. Watch as airplanes just pass me by. And I wanna see a Lear jetliner take a dive. Just to show all of these people what it means to be alive. But I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be so good, so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And my shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. Shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. And I wonder would they pay it any mind when I leave this busted city far behind. I'll take the high road however far it winds. Because peace and love are very, very, very hard to find. And I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be good so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. Damn it, all these suckers make me mad. And it's all I ever had. And it's all I ever had. Suckers make me mad, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, 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 and these suckers make me mad, and it's all I ever had, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had.